Oh, hi there. My name is Bonnie Lippincott, mom of two. During the transformation into motherhood, I learned I needed to trust my intuition, forgive myself, and know that I'm growing alongside my children. The title, Entry-Level Mom, is meant to highlight the obvious. We have no formal training, but everything we need is already within our DNA. This podcast is connected to my book, Entry-Level Mom, and the goal is to share honest and vulnerable stories with friends to encourage each other. I hope you enjoy. In this episode, my guest joins me from across the Atlantic Sea. Granny Margot joins me from Scotland. Margot and I are related on our maternal sides, and she graciously shares the joys of grandmotherhood. She shares what delivery was like in the mid-70s, lessons, how she loves being an involved grandmother, and how it's okay not to be okay. She is loving, kind, nurturing, and brilliant. This was a special episode for me, full of wisdom. Good morning, Margot, or good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Bonnie, on the other side of the world. It's nice to speak to you.
That's right. It's nice to speak to you, too. Thanks for coming on today.
You're welcome.
I have a little intro prepared. So Margot is my family. You're joining me from across the Atlantic Ocean, from Scotland. You are the mother to two and a grandmother to five. You have graciously agreed to come on and discuss grandmotherhood topic. And fun fact, you enjoy traveling with your husband in your caravan with your puppies, and you talk to your grandkids daily, even though you live locally, either in person or in Snapchat, on Snapchat, which I love. But before we talk about being a grandmother, my first question is how you came to be a mother. So how were your two pregnancies and deliveries?
Yeah, my two pregnancies were very different, but there was it was 1973 we got married, so we've just celebrated our golden wedding. So we decided to try and have a family fairly soon after we got married, but we had a bit of a delay. So we had some investigations, and I had narrowed fallopian tubes, and Jim had a low sperm count. So I needed some infertility surgery to stretch the tubes, and Jim had some medication. So in 1976, Christmas time, Lisa was conceived. So the pregnancy was long awaited and much wanted, and it went along fairly easy pregnancy. The usual sort of swollen ankles and feet towards the end because it was summertime and it was quite a hot summer in 1977. So I was still a cook, a chef in a busy restaurant at the time while I was pregnant. So the work was heavy, hot and hard work. So I worked up until I was 6 months pregnant and then left work to have some time for myself before the baby came. But the delivery was horrendous. It was awful. I was late, so I had to have an induction. So after I was induced, the labour was really hard and very painful. And the only pain relief at that time, there was no epidurals or anything, so it was gas and air, like Entonox was this only anaesthesia, or the sedation anyway. And it ended up, there was a delay in the last stage of delivery, so I ended up having to have a forceps and a Von Tooze vacuum delivery, which was really traumatic. And the delivery suite was very busy, medics in and out, nurses in and out, loud clanging equipment. Jim was put out the room because it was kind of traumatic, a kind of emergency situation. So eventually Lisa was delivered, and she was fine. She had some bruises with the forceps, but that was the only thing, so that was fine. But it then transpired that the placenta wouldn't come away easily, so it was kind of stuck to the lining of my womb. So it came out in bits, which again was pretty traumatic, having that delivered, only to find out a couple of days later when I got a high temperature and felt very unwell that part of the placenta was left inside. So I had to end up having another anaesthetic and another surgery to remove the remaining placenta from inside because it started to infect my womb. So that was at the time when you're a new mum and you've got this precious wee baby, to have to then think about going to the theatre again, and you start to imagine all the things that could go wrong because when you're already got a fever, you're quite low. So anyway, that worked out okay. But I had about 10 days in hospital post-delivery because it was quite traumatic and I was very, very bruised right down to my knees and very sore. But we were absolutely over the moon with Lisa. She was absolutely beautiful, so, and much awaited. And we chose her name because I had a sister who was killed when she was 16. So Lisa was part of Isabel and my sister was called Elizabeth, so it was a combination name. So that was good. So the delivery was traumatic, but I had plenty of family support round about me, my mum and my mother-in-law and my sister at the same time. So that was good, but it couldn't have been too traumatic because 9 months later I was pregnant again, much more easily this time with the blockage unlocked. So Jamie came along 18 months after his sister was born, and that delivery was absolutely night and day. I was taken in for induction again because I was late, but I managed to go into labour on my own, and it was nighttime through the night. It was a nighttime labour, and I just had a little Irish nurse who was calm and quiet. And she just, any time I felt myself getting panicked, she would just say, "Come on, dear, we don't want any doctors in here. You can do this." So she just kept me going. And she just, and Jim was there that time, and it was so calm. There was music, just gas in the air again, but it was night and day, and it was much more pleasing, shall we say. Although it was a hard labour, and he was nearly 10 pounds. So he was a much bigger baby than she was, 7.5. And I had all that problem. And I just kept panicking, thinking it's going to be the same again. But any time I started to get a bit anxious, she would just bring me right back down. So I think sometimes it depends on which nurse you have, who's in the room with you, how they can manage to bring you back down to a sort of more calm place, right, and in control of yourself. So that was awesome. And
you said in control of yourself?
In control of yourself, because sometimes you think everything's taken away from you. People are making decisions on your behalf and things happen round about you. But sometimes you just need to have a wee minute to say, well, wait a minute, why are you doing that? Tell me why. Can I have a say in it? Because in 1970, well, it was 79 and 77, you just didn't even think to ask questions. But with the second delivery with their son, it was night and day, and she was an angel. So that made the experience. And I was able to focus on him immediately after he was born, whereas Lisa was kind of taken away, whereas he was given to me at the time. And just, I was only in hospital like 48 hours, and he was beside me all the time. So the difference again on your baby being taken away and then having to go for surgery versus the second time, it was night and day. So that was it.
Thank you for sharing. Yeah, those are vastly different mm-hmm. birth and delivery stories, and mm-hmm. it goes to show how, you know, not one birth can be the same. And of course, you're thinking back to your first birth, thinking mm-hmm. it's going to be just like the first one, but mm-hmm. it sounds like the second one was, one of my friends called her second birth kind of redeeming, where the mm-hmm. first one was so traumatic. A lot mm-hmm. was out of her hands, but especially with that sweet Irish nurse in the middle of the night, we don't want any mm-hmm. doctors here, mm-hmm. giving you the trust back in yourself to make your own mm-hmm. decisions. I love mm-hmm. that.
No, she was super.
Mm. I had a really good delivery nurse too, for both deliveries. I was very lucky. They can make or break your experience.
Yeah, they can make or break your experience. The thing for me was the doctor I had for Lisa's delivery, it was a doctor from overseas. So there was a language problem as well. And the thing that got me was he didn't have any communication really with me. He just did what he needed to do. But when I had to go down for surgery 2 days later, he was the same doctor that had to give me that DNC and to remove the placenta. And I have to admit, because, well, I had a fever anyway and I was kind of delirious, but I really let rip into him. And I told him, if you had done your job properly in the first place, I really did.
Absolutely true.
So I was so proud of myself for speaking up, and people round about were looking because it was in the operating theatre. And I said, if you had done your job properly and removed that after birth, I wouldn't be here now. I wouldn't be infected, and my baby wouldn't be lying up there without me. So I really was proud of myself for speaking up.
I would be proud of myself too. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I didn't know about the naming of Lisa too. That's very special mm-hmm. after mm-hmm. your sister. It's mm-hmm. very sweet. So how is being a grandma different mm-hmm. than being a mother? And what do you love about being a grandmother?
I kind of love everything about being a grandmother because we had 5 grandchildren born within 3 years. So Grace was born on Christmas Day. In fact, it's quite funny that we're doing this today or tonight for me, because I spent the day going through photos from my detachable hard drive and my computer and Facebook and WhatsApp, because I'm making her an album. She's going to be 18 on Christmas Day, so I'm making her a photo book. And just there are just millions and millions of photographs of memories of them here baking and cooking and in the caravan and on swings and shoots and face paints and stuff. And so there's millions. So being a gran is very special. But I think because we had 5 came along really quickly, the love for each of them was instant. And I think it was a different experience in that you had all of the love and the joy without the pain that goes before it. So you were just given a baby wrapped in a towel at the delivery suite by Jamie, and then by Lisa's husband. And it was like you had all the joy without having gone through all the trauma before it. And it was just instantaneous, and just the tears and the hugs and whatever else. So, but I think the main difference for me is the time that I have to spend with them and had to spend with them was very different from being a mum, because being a mum and then going back to work as I did, I missed out on lots of the things that I did for my grandchildren. And my mum and Jim's mum did stuff for my kids that I'm now doing for our grandkids. So I think that the difference is time and the understanding that it's okay to have messy play. It's okay to have the kitchen a mess because you're doing baking cookies. All the fun activities and the time to do that. But I think sometimes at the same time, you have an awareness of the responsibility, because it's not your child if they get hurt and the mum and dad come back to pick them up and they've got a scratch or a cut or a graze or a bump. You're having to say, well, it happened like this, but it was just an accident. You feel this overwhelming defence to yourself to say it was just an accident. You feel if they get hurt, you feel even worse, I think, than if it's your child.
And more so, I haven't thought of it that way before.
Yeah, and more so, I think, for not quite so much for Lisa's children. I don't know why your daughter's children seem slightly different to your daughter-in-law and son's children. I think, well, Lisa, I could say anything and do anything, but I sometimes think with a daughter-in-law, you kind of have to walk on eggshells sometimes. And it's the same with giving advice. I would give advice freely to Lisa because she had a bit of trauma after she had Millie. Hers was an emergency. Well, she had forceps as well, which was really a really traumatic birth she had. And got quite, I'm sure she had postnatal depression. And she got really tearful about she wouldn't breastfeed in public and she was scared getting buggies out and in the car. So I was able to help and support her more, but I was more reluctant to offer these things to Lindsay because I didn't want to be seen as interfering. So I think there was differences for me in how I approached giving advice, trying to do it in such a way that it couldn't be misconstrued as interfering. So that for me was a difference between the two of them. And actually, given that we were going to be speaking today, I had a wee look on mums and being a granny. And it was amazing how much actually came out about being a gran to your daughter's children is different. Although you don't love them any less, but your approach can be different because you're scared to to be seen as interfering sometimes with a daughter-in-law. So I don't know how you feel about that. How do you feel about your mother-in-law?
I know that postpartum, I also suffered with depression and I needed a lot of help and I struggled asking for help because I didn't want to be seen as a failure. Mm-hmm. And I felt, you know, naturally more comfortable with my own mother seeing me in a state where I wanted it to appear that I was doing well. Yeah. The baby is fine. And it was a little bit different with my mother-in-law just because she's not my own mother. Mm-hmm. But I made the decision to let help in and kind of let her see the messy house and mm-hmm. and nurse in front of her and ask for nursing advice. And it really did strengthen our relationship. I hadn't thought about how like the approach might be different with the grandmother aspect of it. So that is interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm. And then I think also being a grandmother, I think that I've done loads of stuff with them because I retired. Lisa went back to work after 6 months, so I gave up work on a Monday. So Lisa would bring Millie first of all, and then Millie when Lois came along on a Sunday, and it let them have date night, and then they went off to work on Monday. So I reduced my working week for that. So from they were 6 months, they came to me. So I had two cots, I had twin prams, I had high chairs, I had everything here. And I quite often had the five of them, if Lindsay was at uni or whatever. So quite often I would have the bed with the two big ones in it and two travel cots and one of them in. So I would have the five of them sleeping here. And then quite often I would have the five of them in the caravan in the holiday. We had five in a bed. We used to sing five in a bed and the little one said roll over. Yes. But we had such great fun, and I always used to have to do the school run. So when I stopped work completely to take up full-time granny when I was 55, so I did, when Millie was going to school age five, the little girls were three, so they were starting, I think you call it preschool, we call it nursery school. So when they were going to nursery school and the big girls were five and they were going to the primary school, we call it, I did the school run, and Keir at that point was just a baby. He was two. So I had the five of them. So I would have my double buggy. I would have a child holding on each side of the double buggy and then the oldest one at the side of that. So I would do that four times a day up and down to this local school walk-in because it's just close by. So, and then I had all the after-school events or the nativity plays and after-school dance clubs and library visits and all these fun things that I missed out on with my own kids. So it was, and it still is fantastic. They come here at least once, the five of them, four of them, because Grace is at university. So we have the four of them come here at least once a week after school. They come straight from school here. And we all sit around the table and have a meal. And the conversation now is very different, as you can imagine. But so we still have a very close bond and we still speak all the time. So, and the conversation is very different to the conversations my two would have with their grandparents. I mean, we have sex talk. We have open conversations that they would never have dreamed about talking to my mum and Jim's mum to. So conversationally, it's different. And I think it's because it's more open at school and they just talk about these things.
So I love that.
Yeah.
The open dialogue is so important. Nothing's mm-hmm. off the table. Nothing's. And what a gift to be so involved that mm-hmm. way. All of those drop-offs, that's a big energy. Yeah. I had no idea what drop-off and pick-up entailed. And I only have two and it can be a lot. It's really special. I can see you with the pram and all of the, the gear. And
I ended up, we had every device here. We had hinge protectors. We had bump protectors on the furniture. We had safety locks for the drawers. We also had three goes at getting the right double pram. So maybe for me being a granny, I should have done a bit more research to find out which one would fold up easier, which one. I bought a really, really, really nice red one because I love red. And it was lovely, but it weighed a ton. So pushing it back up is quite a hill with two children in it and two children holding on to the side and this and some shopping underneath it. I was like, oh, it was a workout getting back up the hill.
That's so relatable, buying the wrong pram. I bought the wrong stroller. I think I went through a few, and I went through a few diaper bags too. My friends told me, invest in a good one. Here's the one to get. And I balked at the price. And then I ended up spending that on all of the cheapo ones I had purchased. Oh, yeah. Okay. What do you wish you knew as you became a grandma?
It's kind of hard one, that, because I think I was just quite happy to take each child and each day and each situation as it came. Not to have to, well, I think probably the thing that I wish I'd knew before I became a grandma was not to buy all that nonsense, all the things that you think children need that they don't need. You know, all the fancy high chairs, but they lie back too much and you're sticking pillows behind the child to get them to sit upright. So maybe that, to think about what I actually really needed to buy rather than just rushing out and saying, oh, I need two of these, I need two travel cots, I need two prams, I need, you know, need. So I think maybe the IKEA, that you have IKEA in California?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the IKEA high chairs, they're the cheapest things in the world, but they are superb and they can go in the dishwasher. So things for me, we eventually bought IKEA ones after having bought a lot of expensive ones. So maybe to just not to rush out and buy all this stuff because they didn't need it. But I think it's quite a, there's nothing that I really wish somebody had sat me down, because I think being a grandma now, or in, well, maybe 2005, Grace was born, so 2005 to 2009 was very different. So my mum couldn't tell me what being a granny would be like for me, because it was different for her. So, and I didn't have any friends at that time who were grannies. So it was quite hard to watch somebody else and see how they were reacting and then think, oh, I could maybe try that. So it was just a case of winging it and just seeing what worked and what didn't work. So there's nothing really shouting out to me that I would like to have known, because I think you don't know what you don't know, and then it just happens.
True. That's so true. And very wise about not rushing out to buy things that you don't need. I think in general, I need to apply that advice in my life, especially with children. But then, is there anything you wish you knew before starting your own family back in the 77?
Yeah, kind of, I suppose, touching on what you said, is that it's okay not to be okay. It's okay not to be this perfect, well-dressed, you know, hair nicely brushed, housework done, meal on the table, back into your size, whatever size you were before, and set yourself all these expectations and setting yourself up to fail. I think it's okay to have a bad day. It's okay to ask for help, and it's okay to accept help that's offered. And I think I didn't know that at the time. You were always striving. You know, I was breastfeeding Lisa and had some problems with that. And I think to burst into tears when the district nurse came in trying to explain, but I ended up had mastitis anyway. So that was a problem, and you were trying to battle through that and quite cheerful. But when visitors came in, you were putting this face on. So I think it was difficult to think you can be. The house can be a mess. That's fine. You can have sick down the top that you're wearing, baby sick. You can, you know, have your comfy jeans on because you're still not back to your size. Although in saying that, when I was pregnant with Jamie and I managed to successfully breastfeed him for a year, he just was just a hungry monster. And I think that was the slimmest I ever was, because when I breastfed him, the weight just came straight from me and went to him. So I had a chubby baby and I lost my weight. So that was a win-win.
That is a similar experience. I think 20 minutes of breastfeeding is equivalent of 20 minutes of running. So I was breastfeeding around the clock, and that's the thinnest I think I've ever been when they were at the peak of breastfeeding. Mm-hmm. I see. Yeah, that's great advice. I think giving yourself grace and knowing that it's okay not to be okay, I think that's really, really wise. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What would you tell your younger self? perhaps in general?
In general, just to almost the old saying, stop and smell the roses. Not to plan your day. I'm still a list writer. I still always do it. And I like to have things, I know what I'm doing next and I know where I'm going and I know what I'm doing. But sometimes when you have a wee baby, it's sometimes nice just to, when they have a sleep, sit down and read your book or a magazine. Sit down and have a cup of tea and do nothing. Leave the washing machine, you know, leave cleaning the worktops. Just to take that time for you, I think, I wished I had done that more, because Jim was at work. People would drift in and out. You were running, making them cups of tea and giving them cookies. And, you know, I think sometimes just to say, no, the baby's down, I'm just going to put my feet up and no go and be a hostess. Just to take time for you is important, I think. Have a bath, have a bubble bath, you know, have a cup of tea or coffee and while they're sleeping. Because then when they're up, you're busy again. So I think taking time for me would have been the thing that I would like to have done differently. Instead of trying to be everything to everybody. Meal on the table when Jim came in for work, that kind of thing. So just to have, stop and take time and enjoy the baby. Have an extra snuggle. Smell the baby smell.
I wrote in the book, instead of stop and smell the roses, stop and smell the baby's feet or stop and smell the baby's head. Mm-hmm. But I think that's so spectacular. You know, I'm learning more every year as I get older that self-care is not selfish and it is the most important. Mm-hmm. It's crucial when you're taking care of more feet on the ground or more babies in your life that you have to, you know, pour from a full cup and taking mm-hmm. time for yourself is a beautiful thing.
And that's what I try to always, especially with Lisa, because she works full time and she's got a really, really high powered job with the city council. And she's got two teenage kids. She's mostly working from home, although she's in and out the office. So we kind of step in and do the school run and take the dog and whatever else. But she also has a husband with MS, primary progressive MS, who's struggling to walk and still at work, so she's also got that pressures on her, so she's my baby still. So we go to the spa, we'll have a girls night and we'll have a glass of wine and a spa and whatever else, just to help her to have her self-care, because sometimes I feel she's my baby but she's still got all these extra pressures on her that she shouldn't have. So it's just, you're still always a mother even though she's 46, but she's still my baby.
I love that. Oh, mm-hmm. That's such a gift to be so present and so giving, Margo. Mm-hmm. That's so special.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think my takeaways a little bit are the, you know, it's okay to have a messy kitchen. The time that you have as a grandmother and is such a gift, because I also work full time and it's difficult to get the number of hours in that really mm-hmm. my heart desires, you know, with the children. Mm-hmm. And then, I think the gift that you give of just being so involved is so spectacular. So I really admire you. I think you're brilliant and kind and generous. And I just, you're a spectacular mother and grandmother. So
well, I have to say that the kids at the school, because I was the granny that did the school run and went to the school shows and went to the school open days, all the kids call me Granny Margot. All the staff at the school know me as Granny Margot. So everybody, a lot of my names on, no, not so much on Facebook and other ones are Granny Margot, because all the kids, and I sometimes also had other children came to me because their parents worked on certain days. So after school, I would have Lois and Lily's friend, Chelsea, came every Tuesday. And I would quite often have extra tag on kids. So Lisa's kind of like that as well. She has a little boy who's Lois and Lily's in their year at school, and his mum tragically died of a diabetic attack, coma, and he tried to save her and couldn't, so, and his dad is with a new woman somewhere else, so he stays between his sister's house and his gran's house. So Lisa has taken Callum under her wing and he stays at Lisa's quite a lot, So he's kind of part, he's like an extra grandson that we have tagging on. He's on the Christmas list and he calls me Granny Margot. So we have a kind of caring.
That's so special. That's so warm and giving. I love that. That's so special.
Thank you. I think it's a genetic thing because I think we're all like that in our family, aren't we?
Aren't Your mum is too. It's in our genes. That's true.
It's genetic.
My grandmother is your mother's cousin.
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes, on the maternal side. It's on our maternal instincts.
It is.
Thank you again. Anything else that you want to share?
No, I just, I think we are proud of the two children that we've raised because they have taken on their own caring side. They are both great kids in their 40s, but they're both great kids. And I think each of the five grandkids are equally, they are, especially Lois, the third granddaughter, she has got the most caring. She would defend any child who's been bullied at school, and she's right in there. And with Callum, she has been his rock, and she goes to counselling with him and just supports him. But Millie was our second granddaughter, but the first one who came the six months, week in, week out, day in, day out. So, and she wrote us the most beautiful letter for our golden wedding. She just hand wrote this letter about saying how we had formed our childhood and how she appreciated everything we had done for her. And it was the most, honestly, it's the most loving letter. I'll send you it by messenger. I'll send you a wee picture of it by messenger and you can have a look. But I think it's good to see that each of the children have taken on, because they've been raised with love and care, I think they're able to absorb that and then share that with others. So lots of children. I did the children's panel in Scotland, which I did that for 17 years. And it's where you go and you sit as a three and you make decisions for children who are either abused, neglected, or who are offending or missing school. So I did that for 17 years. And I saw these children who were in the most horrific home circumstances, whether it be physical or sexual abuse or starvation in this society, in this, you know, in this day and age was horrific, where you have parents who are involved in drugs and criminality, or parents who just don't have capacity to understand what a child needs, who think that an iPhone and a tattoo is better than a clean sheets on their bed and a full belly. So we had to make decisions and remove children and to limit contact or increase contact. So I saw children who were deprived and impacted forever. And then I look at my own grandchildren and just blessed, you know, that they've had that in their lives. So I'm sorry, I'm ranting, I'm rambling, but.
No, I think it's important to, you know, to highlight, because it seems sometimes I feel like I'm doing it all wrong and it feels like, it's so nuanced and I'm at entry level and I don't know what I'm doing, but it really can be, it can be simple when you look at the approach of love and care. Kids mm-hmm. need love and care.
That's right. The primary needs, if you meet a child's primary needs, you know, don't stick them with a Xbox in their room till they're on it till 2 and 3 in the morning and then they can't get up for school and then they're missing out in education. I had these arguments with parents all the time because they had children who weren't attending school, yet they had these technology in their room. And I'm saying, take it out at 9 o'clock at night. Take it and hide it in your room. They shouldn't have it. They need to go to sleep so that they can have a sleep. They can get up, get showered and breakfast and be in a good position to learn, because that's the right to have education. But some people just don't get it. They don't parent the child. The child is their friend and they do what the child wants rather than being responsible and being a parent, which is more important.
That's very wise and very, very great advice. What else did you tell them?
Oh my goodness. The things you can imagine me, you know, when I start talking, that some people were scared to ask hard questions of the families and they would kind of frilly round about it. Whereas some families had too much help going in. Some families had housing support workers, social workers, mental health workers, housing support officers, drug recovery officers, they would have thousands of pounds worth of resources going into their family, and nothing was changing unless they were able to make that change. They would still do drugs. They would still have another man and another baby with that man. And it just was just cyclical. You know, it would just go round and round and round. And you had all these wee children who were just, you know, we had one child who nearly died because of starvation. And they had 11 children. And the husband never worked and just sat drinking alcohol all day, watching DVDs. And the consultant from the hospital came to tell us how near death that child was. And the discussions we had, you can imagine, you know, about priorities. It was just, and they couldn't understand that their child was a meal ticket because they got benefits, as you do in your country. You know, some people live on welfare, and sometimes they don't really want to get off it. Some people desperately do, but some people, that's their family did it, and they come along and do it, and then the children doesn't go to school, doesn't get the education, doesn't get work. So, and then they have babies at 15. You know, it's tremendous, just heartbreaking. So I did that for 17 years.
Wow, that's really important work, and that's amazing that you did it for such a long
duration. It was just a volunteer. So you had to have extensive training, and you would have maybe twice a month, you would have three or four families come before you. But you would get the reports would come in, they were like this thick, you know, 4 inches thick reports would come. So I would sit at the dining room table and read and condense and ask, think about what I needed to find out, who needed to give me that information, and what would be the best decision for the child. So it was interesting. But I think when it became, when they started to change it away from wanting to put our pictures up and a bit about us in the room, and I went, no, if I'm taking somebody's child away, I don't want them to see that my name is Margot Hardy and I live in Armidale. I don't want them to see that, and I don't want my windows to get put in at night because we've removed their child. You know, they don't do it. The judge in court doesn't put up here, I'm Judge so-and-so and this is my address and I like cats, right. You know, you don't do that. And so right. When it started to get a bit silly and turn it away from what was right for the child, it's almost like giving a child who's obese another two packs of sweets because, you know, that's nice, just give them sweets. So you have to kind of make this tough decisions for them.
But right, fair. The tough, but yeah, the right and safe decisions for them, mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. What important work.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, thanks again for coming on and talking about all of this. Mm-hmm. I feel like I've learned a lot. I have a whole page of notes and just that self-care and taking time for my, taking time.
That's the key. That always is the key. Okay, honey. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was nice to chat with you.
Absolutely it was. I hope your listeners can understand my accent. Try to speak slowly and modify my words.
It was lovely. It was perfect. I think it was perfect. Thank you, Margot.
Thank you, honey.
Thanks for listening. The book Entry Level Mom will be available December 2023. Details will be listed at the website booksbybonnielippincott.com, all one word. If you want to follow along, my Instagram is booksbybonnielippincott, separated by underscores. TikTok is entrylevelmom, and email is booksbybonnielippincott@gmail.com. Have a great day, and please remember to be kind to yourself.